Hi, folks. You're so welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I really, really, really appreciate it. My name's Jamie. I use he, him pronouns, and you're listening to the Proper Full On Gay Podcast, that show where we... what do we do again?
Talk about Heartstopper.
Yes, that show where we talk about Heartstopper with really fascinating guests and queer youth charities from all over the world. Speaking of fascinating guests, welcome back Paula Manners from LGBT Youth Scotland. Hello, Paula.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be back.
It's so nice to have you back with us. It really is good. It's great. You've guested with us so much. It's fantastic. If you haven't listened to any of Paula's previous episodes, I strongly recommend that you head back and take a look for those because they are fantastic. Paula, why don't you, for listeners who maybe haven't listened, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about LGBT Youth Scotland and the work that you do?
So my name is Paula, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the Digital Youth Work Manager at LGBT Youth Scotland. We're Scotland's national charity for LGBTQ plus young people, and our vision is to make Scotland a place where LGBTQ plus young people can flourish and thrive. And we do that through a range of things. We run youth groups and one-to-one coaching sessions for young people directly. We also run the LGBT Charter Programme, where we support schools and organisations to become more inclusive and positive spaces for LGBTQ plus young people. And we also work with young people to have their voices heard through like policy and decision makers and things like that.
Oh, your organisation has such a huge remit. It must be so hard to keep on top of it all.
It's true, we do a lot of things. I think we're up to 49 staff now. So it's quite,
that's growing.
That's
crazy. Thanks so much for tuning in. As I said, it would be really helpful, listeners, if you could pop along to our Instagram and give us a follow, or our TikTok. We've got a TikTok now, so head over to TikTok and give us a follow there, like a few of our posts. That would be super helpful. I'm so lucky to have such great listeners. Like, I really love all of our listeners. You guys are great. You're fantastic. I just want to share some exciting news before we get stuck into the episode. Some really exciting news. We're coming up to the end of season two. I cannot believe that this is episode 7 already. It has just flown by. Don't worry, Heartstopper superfans. I'm already working on this great series of bonus episodes for next year. They'll come out between season 2 and season 3, probably from February. We'll start to release our bonus episodes. And this episode actually touches on 3 of the themes that we're going to explore in those bonus episodes next year. So listen out and I'll tell you about those themes as they come up. What was your highlight from this episode, Paula? Episode 7, sorry, there's so much in it. What was your highlight?
There's so much to enjoy in this episode. I really enjoyed some of the amazing examples of parents being really supportive and kind to their LGBT young people, and just seeing like what an impact the parents can have on young people's developing sense of themselves, their confidence and self-esteem. I thought that was beautiful, and there's some just wonderful, and this is Heartstopper all over, isn't it? There's some beautiful moments of friendship and seeing you're just being part of how having people in your life who you resonate with, who have had similar experiences to you, is just such an amazing thing as you develop your sense of your own identity.
It's so true, and I love that you said that about the Heartstopper parents, because it's one of the things that I really love about this episode is how it juxtaposes 4 different story arcs, all of which involve Heartstopper parents. First of all, we've got Tara and her mum right at the start of the episode. Then we get another great scene with Tao and his mum.
Favorite
moments in the whole episode. I have to say, and Tao's mum was like one of my favorite characters. Then we get Ben, he talks about his parents. We've got Nick and his dad. We've got Darcy and her mum. There are so many Heartstopper parents in this episode. Lots of different character arcs are being juxtaposed, but they all tell a different story about how parents can have that impact on their queer young people. I only spotted this theme after a conversation that I had with a listener called Bella over Instagram. She reached out via Instagram and we were talking about how impactful parents could be.
Yeah.
And actually planning an episode for next year. So this is one of the bonus episodes that we've got coming up in 2024. And after we had that conversation, I started to prepare for this episode. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's 100% what this episode is doing. It's juxtaposing all of those different story arcs that involve Heartstopper parents. So it's really good. And one of the things I think is really interesting is even though they all struggle with their parental relationships, they all react in different ways, as we would do in real life, you know, they react so differently. Like Darcy isolates herself and she tries to keep what's happening from Tara. Nick's very open and he kind of seeks support from Charlie. Ben internalizes his homophobic environment. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. It's yeah, there's so many beautiful moments and then equally so many moments that are really heartrending and show you, yeah, I guess, the impact that those negative and homophobic attitudes can also have on young people's lives.
I know there are some really heartbreaking moments. Like, I am definitely going to shed a tear whenever we get to those. Anyway, should we get stuck in to today's
Let's
episode?
Do it.
We open the show with Tara and Darcy, and we get this sense that maybe Darcy has been staying over at Tara's quite a lot.
Indeed.
Should we have a listen in to this moment?
Definitely.
I was crying at a party, which is...
Girls, are you awake? It's almost midday. You know Granny would have a heart attack if she knew I was letting your girlfriend sleep over.
Granny would have a heart attack if she knew I was a lesbian.
That may be true, but it's about the principle. No sleepovers tonight.
You should probably go. But I don't want you to.
Such a funny moment. Her mum commenting that her granny would have a heart attack if she knew Tara was sleeping over. It's so funny.
Yeah, I know. And so true. And there's just a lovely thing about her mum just trying and wanting to be really supportive and caring. But also she's, I guess, concerned about her daughter growing up and what that means. And that's a difficult transition for all parents when they watch their children.
I know.
Older.
It's such an interesting kind of area to think about. Like, I'm a parent myself and like my daughter's reaching the age of 14 now. So when she gets to this age where she's like 15, 16 and has her first partner and everything else, where is that line for like letting partners stay over? And it must become a little bit more complicated for parents of teenagers who have same-sex partners. Do you think that parents might find it quite tricky territory in early queer relationships?
I think some parents probably do. And I guess it's important to reflect on the fact that your first relationships are your first relationships, regardless of whether it's a straight or a same-sex relationship. And you need to, I guess parents need to have those conversations with their children about sex and about how they feel about it and making sure they're informed and understand what they're doing regardless. But I think you're probably right that some parents will feel a bit less confident having those conversations because they won't have had, I guess I'm imagining a lot of parents won't have had, you know, sex education that thought about relationships between men and between women. Let alone between trans people and things like that. So how are they then empowered to have those conversations with their children and make sure that their children do feel confident and comfortable having, you know, having conversations with their partners about sex and safe sex and what it means?
Yeah, I'm kind of reminded of that moment with Charlie and his dad back in episode 1 or 2 where Charlie tells him that Nick's his boyfriend and straight away his dad's like, oh, no more sleepovers. Nick's not allowed to come for sleepovers anymore.
Yes. Immediately shuts it down.
Yeah, so different with Tara's mum. You know, it's so different. Anyway, I kind of wonder if she senses that something isn't quite right with Darcy. You know the way parents sometimes have that intuition?
Yeah, with their children's friends and seeing where maybe things aren't right. I never thought about it, but I think you're probably right. Maybe she feels a lot protective of Darcy.
Yeah, for sure. And we cut to a quick montage. First, we visit Nick, who notices an Instagram picture from that dinner in Paris, and he notices that Charlie hasn't really eaten much from his plate. It's funny how Nick is starting to really pay attention to things, and he's really starting to pick up on these little cues from Charlie. Of course, it relates to Charlie's eating disorder. It's kind of heartbreaking to watch this story arc develop. Yeah. Like, anybody who's read the books knows where this is going. And we visit Charlie, too, who's scrolling through Instagram. This time, a message pops up from Ben. He's seen the image about Nick's coming out, and he wants to talk to Charlie. He gets quite anxious. He swipes the message away. It must feel like, for Charlie, that he just can't escape. Like, it really must feel awful.
Yeah.
We also find out that Elle has been offered a place at the art school.
And well done, Elle.
I know, it's so exciting. And her work's been chosen for their Here and Queer exhibition, which celebrates queer and trans artists. And then finally, we pick up with Tao, who's doing a happy dance in his room before he's interrupted by his amazing mum. This is such a cute moment. Like, this is one of the highlights of the episode for me. Should we have a listen?
Yes, please.
mood?
Yeah.
Anything I should know about?
Maybe. Maybe me and Elle decided to get together.
Special girl, the perfect girl for my perfect boy. Oh, I have to call Papa to tell her the news, and then I have to call Auntie Lee and Aunt
Mom, Sang. Mom, we haven't talked about actually being boyfriend and girlfriend.
Oh, we've all been waiting for this.
It's so funny. I love
it. It's so lovely. Mom.
It really is just beautiful how supportive she is and how excited she is. It's just great.
It's such a delight to listen to, and she doesn't make a big deal at all of the fact that her son is dating a trans girl. She's just excited and ecstatic because she loves Elle so much. So it's a very beautiful thing.
It's so sweet. You picked this as one of your top moments.
Yes, it's just it's like you said, it's very pure sort of joy for Tao.
Yeah.
You know, he's finally managed to tell her how she feels, and she feels the same way. Which is a beautiful moment in any teenager's life. And then just seeing his mum's delight. For someone to take a delight in this burgeoning queer relationship, I thought was really lovely and happy. Oh, and
definitely.
There was no fear or worry about what does this mean and what does this mean about. There's so many questions and things she could have said or been worried about. She just isn't, because she loves her son and she loves his new girlfriend.
I know, it's great. It's such a joy to watch. And it's such good role modeling, isn't it? For parents everywhere, you know? It really is fantastic. I love it. I love it. Anyway, we cut over to Charlie and Tori. This is another Mario Kart reference. Longtime listeners will have heard me talk about Mario Kart before. I think that it pops up in the show so often because it's a nod to Nintendo, which was the first mass producer of video games, I guess, to include a trans character in one of their games. Don't ask me to name the game that they're in. That actually was an observation from a guest that we had from Cara Friend way back in series one. Again, don't ask me which episode because I can't remember. But anyway, let's have a listen.
Yes. Get it over here. Stop it.
We've been invited to Nick's for a dinner party.
Wow. Mum will love that.
What do you mean?
She's not exactly Nick's biggest fan, is she?
Well, maybe this will help her see how great he is.
And they're right. She's not really Nick's biggest fan.
No, she sees Nick as just distracting her son from his schoolwork.
I know.
Preventing him from achieving.
I know. It can be so hard whenever parents don't really see eye to eye with your partner. Even for adults, it's hard. But for teenagers with that kind of power dynamic at play, it must be like so much worse.
Yeah, it feels so well-intentioned. Like, ultimately, she does just want her son to do really well, and she doesn't want anything to get in the way of that. But, of course, it's not helpful. You know, this young people are doing a lot at this stage of their lives. They're sitting exams, and they're experiencing their first relationship. They're learning how to navigate all of that at one time. So it is a parent's role to come alongside and support, but she's clearly struggling with that.
Definitely. I think we talked about this in the last episode that you were on.
I think we did as well.
Yeah, it's funny. As Tori watches over Charlie's shoulder in the scene, he receives two more messages from Ben. Like, come on, this is like so intense. How can he possibly process what's happened and kind of move on when Ben's just popping up all over the place?
He's not getting the space to get distance from it to be able to work out how he feels. Absolutely.
I know, it's hard. It's so hard. I forgot to mention at the start of the show, you've probably noticed already, listeners, that we're going to skip a few scenes just because we've got so much to talk about. We're going to skip a few scenes. So we did skip a scene between Nick and his brother, and we're going to skip another scene now, the montage with Elle sharing news about the art exhibition. And we're going to cut straight to Darcy. Darcy's arriving home in this scene, and we see how difficult it is. How stressed she is about what's happening. Like, she pauses just as she crosses the road and gives herself a nod of encouragement with purple clouds drifting out from underneath her door. There's no audio in the scene, but I wanted to include it because it must be so hard for young people that experience this kind of hostility from home.
I was so moved watching Darcy, and you're right, what they managed to convey without sound of just Darcy's dread of going home, of leaving a place where she felt supported, she's got her happy relationship, her love with Tara, and heading home to an environment where she's not accepted, she's not supported, and seeing, for us, the viewer, seeing the opposite of, you know, Tao's mum, who's so supportive and accepting, and how much of a positive impact that has on Tao. We see the flip side here, that as much as parents can provide great benefit to their children with when they behave in the way Darcy's mum does, they also can cause great harm.
I know, it's so heartbreaking to watch it play out with Darcy. It really is a tough story arc to watch. We then pick up with Isaac. So we cut from Darcy arriving home and we pick up with Isaac and the rest of the friends in the high street. Isaac tells him that he's off to see James. So he heads off to meet James. He's a bit nervous as the other friends kind of cheer and speculate about them kissing. But we're going to stick with the rest of the friends. They're out shopping for prom outfits. Let's have a listen to the first moment.
I think I'm going to go to prom.
Yeah?
Yeah. Would you like to, like, be my prom date?
Really?
I don't know, maybe it's stupid.
No. No, it's not. We might get a lot of attention. And I don't want to wear matching suits.
Oh, me neither.
Good.
Good.
Oh, such a cute moment. Can you imagine them in matching suits? Like an
80s movie? Terrible. I'm totally with Charlie on that.
Oh, it would have been so cute.
No, it would have been terrible.
Yeah, I know, it totally would have been. These kind of moments mean the world to Charlie, don't they? Where he gets to just live his authentic life with his boyfriend, you know, they just mean so much.
Those moments of normality, like the normal, like rituals of adolescence and growing up, and what part of that is having like a school dance and being able to take your first boyfriend or girlfriend with you and do that in public, which a lot of queer young people haven't had historically, being able to have those relationships in front of your friends. It doesn't have to be a secret.
It's so true. Are moments like this still quite rare where queer couples get to go to the prom together, the school dance together?
I definitely is getting more common. I feel a little bit out of touch with that. Like, I'm actually not 100% sure of the answer, but given the fact that lots of schools now have LGBT clubs in them and have a lot more young people, you know, being open about their sexual orientation or gender identity, I suspect that it is certainly going to be a lot more common than, you know, the dark days when you and I were at school.
Yeah.
And I think that's wonderful. It's wonderful because young people are getting the chance to learn about relationships and make all their mistakes at an age-appropriate time with their peers at, you know, developmentally, at the stage where they're supposed to be learning, making mistakes and, you know,
You're so right.
But historically, LGBT people have kind of had their relationships, made their mistakes a bit later in life.
Yeah, that's it. And even if it is still a bit rare, it's still lovely just to know that it happened. You know what I mean? It really is lovely. And one of the things that I really love about this scene is just this celebration of queer young people out shopping for outfits together. Like, we see Elle tries on this beautiful gown and Darcy tries on this great suit. Should we take a listen to the next?
I love this bit.
Yeah, me too.
For prom.
No.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe?
Try it on. Look, the lining matches my dress. It's perfect.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, okay.
Ta-da! Oh my God. You look amazing.
I don't know if I can afford it. I haven't got much left after
Paris. No, it's fine. I've got the change. Oh my God.
Amazing. You like it?
I've got some.
I really love that moment. It's another one of those moments that just makes me tear up every time.
Yeah. It's what I think it's what Heartstopper brings that so few shows have brought previously, which, you know, historically LGBT shows about LGBT young people have very much been sort of dark and about tragedy and about how challenging it can be. But Heartstopper did an amazing job of showing us these like beautiful, happy, fun moments of friendship and laughter. It reminds me, years ago, they used to do like an LGBT prom in the youth group I ran. It reminds me of like all of our young people getting ready for it. And it was sort of, you know, like young women like trying out wearing like a tie. It was adorable. Yes. Very sweet and very like Yeah, very wholesome.
Yeah, it's so great. It's so great. Is that kind of environment sometimes a bit intimidating for queer young people?
Yeah, I think anything where like the normative way of being is, you know, heteronormative, cisnormative is going to be a more challenging environment. But what this episode showed us is that where you have your little crowd, your people that you go in with, then you feel that feels really powerful. And it's that feeling that characters have of like being able to take on the world because they've got their support around them. They've got their crew.
Yeah, that's so true. It's so true. And it's just lovely how they all kind of chip in at the end and club together. You know, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, so supportive and affirming for Darcy and such a contrast to, I guess, the other key relationships in her life with her parents.
Yeah, her for mom. Sure. Yeah, it's hard. And then that makes it so much harder how this story arc develops. You know what I mean? Anyway, we'll talk about that in a bit. So we're going to pop over and visit with Isaac and James in the bookstore. Yeah, let's listen.
Hey, sorry, some man just bought like 15 of those Penguin Cough Pound classics.
Wow, that is like life goals.
So I'm guessing you don't feel the same about me then.
I don't know how I'm supposed to feel when I have a crush on someone. You know, I read all these books where people fall in love, and I still have absolutely no idea. I thought that I might feel that way about you. But then we kissed, and I just knew that I didn't. I think there might be something wrong with me.
There's nothing wrong with you. You probably just haven't found the right person yet.
Yeah.
At the risk of sounding repetitive, I just love this story arc so much. It really is a lovely moment between Isaac and James.
And part of Isaac's sort of journey to starting to come to understand himself. And his experience of just feeling quite different and feeling like he's not, I think that's what he said, feeling like he's not feeling the things he's supposed to be feeling.
Yeah.
And this is painful for the other young person as well, whose name has fallen out of my head. What's that?
James.
James. Sorry. James.
You're cancelled, Paula. That's it. We've got any Jameses. We're going to have to cut you from the show. This is your last appearance.
I know, I'm never, ever invited back. But it's hard. You know, James is putting yourself out there to say you like someone. It's always named it scary.
It is hard.
But Isaac's not rejecting him. What he's saying is, he's trying to say, I don't feel like I feel attraction in the way other people do. And James can't quite hear what he's saying, really. I don't think he's not he's probably just focused on his own feelings of I feel sad because the person that I'm attracted to doesn't feel the same way about me. So he's not quite meeting Isaac where in terms of what he's trying to say, I think, when he says, you know, maybe you've just not met the right person yet.
I know.
Yeah. Just an understandable thing to say, but probably not what Isaac needed to hear in that moment.
Do you think it's something that aromantic people and asexual people experience, that kind of response from people?
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly something at LGBT youth, we have a lot of asexual and aromantic young people who come to our groups or come onto our live chat service, and it's certainly something that they describe because within our society, it is viewed as such an aberration to not experience sexual attraction. That kind of attitude of incredulity of, that can't possibly be true. You've just not met the right person yet. It's really common. And of course, that is a possibility for a young person, but it's also possible that they won't feel sexual attraction.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of a bit heartbreaking in a way, like Isaac's comment that he thinks that there's something wrong with him. Like, it's heartbreaking that people think that.
Yeah. And probably the way a lot of gay young people would have felt historically, and asexual people are telling us that today, that they've been told they're broken. There's something wrong with them because asexual is vital in our society.
Which is a little crap.
It's total nonsense. You know what I mean? Yeah.
If you think about it, like, we have this one idea of how people should lead their lives. Yeah. Like, it's just bollocks, really, isn't it?
There's so many ways of leading their lives, and that's certainly, you know, we did a project recently with asexual young people who've wrote and created a resource that's not available yet, but will be on our website, you know, in the coming year. about asexuality and aromanticism and what it means to them. And I feel like one of the main points that we want to get across is that they have meaningful relationships and love in their life. That there's lots of ways of doing a relationship. It's not just about, you know, historically kind of one man and one woman being in a committed marriage for the rest of their lives. That's, there's lots of ways of having happy, healthy relationships, and those relationships can also be platonic.
Of course, yeah. Oh, I can't wait until that gets released. That sounds really interesting, actually. I think that's one of the things that I love so much about your resources is that they're all like, they're all founded and they're all centered on young people. Like, it's the young people who write them, you know, they're like right at the heart of those resources. And whenever you read things like your trans coming out guide and your other guides, just like those experiences, like being able to read of the young people's experiences, just makes them so much more enriched. And they really are great. If anybody is interested, head to LGBT of Scotland's website and you can download all those resources from there. Fantastic.
We have a new website that's launching in January that will have a lot more resources and information, so keep your eyes peeled for our new website launch in 2024.
That sounds so exciting. After James leaves, he finds his friends again out in the street and they're all so excited to hear the gossip. We just get this sense of how anxious Isaac feels about it, or how confused he snaps back at them. He's having a hard time. It's hard.
Poor Isaac. Yeah, I think because I guess it's that feeling as well, you know, when you feel different in a group of young people who are different. Do you know what I mean? And they all belong. Yes. They found their belonging, but you're still the odd one out.
Oh, that's
so true.
That feels
really resonant of how some people describe feeling within the LGBT community as well. Like, you know, some bisexual people have described that, and definitely some, because LGBT spaces can often be highly sexual spaces. If you're not into that, they might feel quite alienating.
That's so true. I hadn't thought of that extra layer where Isaac is like, his group are all kind of part of the queer community, but he still hasn't found his place within that community.
Absolutely. He's not found his, not found his label, like not found his identity, the way he wants to describe himself.
Yeah, that's it.
Later. Spoilers.
And sometimes it's having that language to be able to communicate is just so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a shorthand because he's so struggling to communicate with James here, to tell James what he means. And of course, it's not until later that maybe he starts to find that language.
Yeah.
Describe himself. It feels like home.
For sure. I can't actually wait until this story arc develops. I think it's going to be really good. Like, season three is going to be a really great season for Isaac. I can't wait.
Definitely.
We're going to stick with Isaac. We're going to head to the Here and Queer exhibition at the Lambert School of Art. And the friends have gathered at Elle's art show, where her work is on display. An artwork featuring what looks like love letters, letters and love notes, I guess, catches Isaac's eye. Should we have a listen to this part?
It's my one.
Really? I love it.
Thanks.
What's it about?
Basically about my experience being aromantic and asexual. Like, being in a world where romance and sex are prized above everything else when you don't feel those forms of attraction. Growing up, feeling that something about you is different, but you don't have the words to describe what that is. But then, freedom. The euphoria of freeing yourself from those pressures and expectations.
Have I mentioned that I really love the story arc? Like, this
you
is...
may have done once or twice.
This is such an important moment for Isaac, but it's so lovely. This is another really lovely moment.
And it's what a lot of young people get, you know, from coming to our youth groups, is that experience of meeting someone who's had the same experience, and how revolutionary that is to realise that that thing that was making you feel so weird, so different, actually you're not alone, and there's other people who feel that way too.
It's so true. This is the first time he's met somebody who identifies as asexual and aromantic, and he shares his experience. And when he hears them talk about it, the heartstopper leaves start to swirl around him. It's just a lovely, lovely moment.
It's really beautiful.
It really is. Hopefully we get to see more of this new character. Like, he isn't named. He's like an unnamed extra, or they're like an unnamed extra. Hopefully we get to see more of him in season three. But this is a really beautiful story arc that Isaac's going to go on. I can't wait until we see more of it. There's another really iconic moment in this scene. We're not going to talk about it today. It's Elle's tree, the unveiling of Elle's art piece, Safe Space, I think it's called. It's a really beautiful moment. We talked about it in our highlights episode where we talked about the highlights of season two. So if you're interested, head back and take a listen to that. Sadly, we don't have time to talk about everything today.
I know, it's devastating.
Until the art exhibition, Elle has been able to keep her news of being offered a place at the college under wraps, but there's no avoiding it now. Tao overhears a conversation where she's congratulated and they find a quiet moment to catch up. Let's have a listen.
I'm glad you liked it.
I really liked it. It was amazing, as usual.
I know you're probably annoyed that I didn't tell you I got in.
I'm not annoyed.
Really?
Please don't base your decisions on how I feel. All I care about is you being happy, and wherever you are, I'll still want to be with you.
Okay. But I also still haven't decided yet. I may still stay at Higgs.
This is another really sweet moment.
Yeah.
Tao's really grown so much from being all anxious about their friendship group falling apart in season one to how relaxed he is now with Elle moving away. It's great.
He loves her so much. I the way I guess I read it, I think there's part of him that's so desperate doesn't want her to go, but he also wants, I guess it's an example, like a healthy relationship where you don't try and control your partner or restrict them, but you want them to grow and flourish and do what's best for them, even when that is painful for you. So yeah, I loved how here, and I really feel for him as well, because he wants her to do that. He wants her to be happy and he wants her to stay as well.
Yeah, for sure. It must be such a conflict for him. But let's face it, they got the train to this art exhibition. She's not that far away.
I know. It's the drama of youth, you know, when you're used to seeing someone sort of every day. Only seeing them one day a week might feel quite devastating. I guess they've already dealt with that though when she goes to a new school. That felt hard. So they can handle this.
And we don't know. She might choose to move away and actually live closer to the art college like some people do, you know. So maybe that's how that story arc will develop. But still, it's not that far.
No. It's not another country or anything. We'll have to go on a plane.
Exactly. As Nick and Charlie leave the exhibition, Ben is waiting outside. Dum, dum, dum. This is the whole episode has been building towards this moment, of course, where there's this inevitable confrontation between the two. Because this is quite chunky, we're going to split it into two parts. So first of all, we'll hear Ben's monologue. He does have a bit of a monologue, and then Charlie gets a bit of a monologue too. So let's listen in to Ben.
Please, just hear me out. I'm not going back to Truham for sixth form, so if you really hate me after this, you'll never see me again.
Go on then.
I'm a messed up person, Charlie. I liked you. You know that, don't you? I know I was a piece of shit, but I really liked you. If I just had more time. I want to be like you two, but my parents would never accept who I really am. I'm sorry for everything. I just wanted something good. You were something good.
How Ben talks about their relationship is a bit different to how I imagined he would talk about it. Like, he smiles, remembering their relationship as being something really good, and then his face lights up whenever Charlie asks him to remember their first kiss. It's clear that he really did like Charlie, but it doesn't seem like he really fully understands what was happening there, what was going on.
Listeners will have really different responses to Ben's little kind of soliloquy here and what he's saying. I personally struggled to buy it. I felt a bit like, oh, you're rewriting history.
Oh, you think? Okay.
Yeah, I know. I think we're having a different reaction, which is always interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
I felt like there was something slightly manipulative about it, where I was like, you know, there's no empathy at all for Charlie's experience. Like, no empathy.
That's true.
for what Charlie went through. It's just all about, here's why my life is hard. So I didn't feel bad.
You did. I didn't really feel bad for him either. I was just wondering,
surprised.
Like,
yeah,
because it was so different, and to me, it did seem authentic. I don't know. I was gonna ask a follow up.
I'm a cynic. Maybe.
I know. I was gonna ask if it's common that some abusers maybe don't fully understand that their behavior is abusive.
Yeah.
And could that be what's happening here?
I think that's a really complex question that I don't totally feel 100% able to answer. I think it's not, my personal view be that it's not that common.
Yeah.
I think what you see in terms of when we look back and think about Ben's behavior towards Charlie is he's had this orchestrated campaign to undercut Charlie's self-esteem,
right,
to isolate him from his friends, to make him feel humiliated.
Yeah,
involved,
right,
emotional abuse, controlling behaviors. I don't think that that's something that you do by, I don't think one accidentally abuses someone. I think you can be unaware of the impact of your behavior on others.
Yeah.
I think Ben certainly seems to lack empathy,
mm-hmm,
but I think that he knows that what he's doing is wrong.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I kind of agree, because he was very controlling of Charlie, and he,
sure,
did react whenever he lost that control. He reacted very aggressively.
Yeah.
You know, we saw that at the end of episode one in season one where he assaulted Charlie. And yeah, you're right. That kind of control doesn't happen accidentally. You know,
no,
those kind of reactions. In this scene, Ben implies that his parents are quite hostile towards queer people and that they would reject him if he were to come out. And that's why he needs more time. What isn't really clear is whether he needs more time because he doesn't feel safe maybe to come out while he's living at home, or just that he needs more time to come to terms with his identity himself.
And of course, both things can be true, can't they? It can be true that Ben's behaviour is abusive, and it can also be true that he's having a hard time accepting his sexuality and might not get a great response from his parents.
Yeah, that's it. And in some ways, it kind of explains where the self-loathing that he feels come from, like if he lives in this hostile environment. And that definitely seems to be what he projects almost onto Charlie. But again, it doesn't excuse his behavior.
No.
You know, it helps us to understand somewhat, but it really doesn't, it doesn't make up for what he's done. Should we talk about Charlie?
Let's do it.
Let's listen.
Do you remember the first time you kissed me? You didn't even ask. You didn't pause to wonder whether it was what I wanted. And I went along with it because I had a crush and I didn't know any better. I didn't realize that you had all the control. When I eventually did realize, I thought, this must be what I deserve. Someone taking whatever he wants from me whenever he wants. Treating me like I'm nothing the rest of the time. And now whenever anything good happens in my life, there's a little voice in the back of my mind telling me I'm worthless and that I don't deserve it. And now you want me to forgive you so you can feel better about yourself. I'm glad you realized what you did was wrong, but you don't get to ambush me into forgiving you. Sorry doesn't make up for everything you did to me. I really hope you become a better person so you don't hurt anyone else. But I don't want to be there to see that happen. I don't want to see you ever again.
Oofed.
I know, like that's such a heavy moment.
Yeah.
Such a heavy moment. For Charlie, talking about his relationship with them and how it injured him must have taken a lot of courage.
So much courage. And there's something just so powerful about this moment of Charlie getting the chance to confront the person who hurt him with evidence of his behaviour. And, you know, he says at the beginning there, doesn't he, you know, I didn't realise that you had all the control. But Charlie's definitely taking back the control here, and he's taking control of the narrative and being like,
definitely,
what you just said about us having a lovely relationship, that is not the case. This
yeah.
is what happened. This is what you did. And I don't want to see
yeah.
it again. It feels really, I hope that will be a really therapeutic thing for Charlie to have been able to say that.
Definitely, definitely. Is it quite rare that survivors of relationship abuse and domestic abuse have this kind of opportunity to tell their abuser about the lasting damage that they caused?
Yeah, I guess in my experience, yes, it's pretty rare, because obviously a lot of the time that might not be safe for someone. You're really confronting someone with what you did, it caused a reaction. So yeah, I think it is reasonably rare. It's certainly not particularly something I'd recommend. Obviously, it's really satisfying to watch here, but I think in reality, and someone like Ben's got a history of violence, there would be a risk that he would have a violent reaction here. It's not what happens in the show, but it could happen in real life.
It's a really good point.
That's
actually
partly why it's so satisfying to watch, because it probably wouldn't happen in real life. So it's just amazing to see that someone getting the chance to say all those things. It reminds me of I don't know if you followed it. Did you follow the trial of Larry Nassar in the US?
No, I didn't.
That was them. It was the US women's gymnastic team and their doctor kind of systematically abused the girls.
I've
and
at his
trial,
the
judge let all of the women read victim impact statements. It took like over a week for all to get through all of them. And there was just something so powerful about seeing these women like confront the man who abused them with like, here's what you did and I'm not broken by it. It was amazing. I've never heard of anything like that in this country, but it was just amazing to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And I can see how that would be empowering to be able to
100%.
This opportunity to tell them exactly what you think and the impact that it had. I love how this scene ends with like that colourful wave reaching out from the exhibition towards Ben. I think it's a lovely way to emphasise that queer people will always find help and support from within the community, even if they are dicks like Ben is. That there'll always be a place for them, whether that's support, you know, through support that they can access, whether it's counselling services or therapy or just to connect, you know.
Absolutely.
I have another future episode to plug. This is another episode before season 3 comes out. So part of our mini series next year is going to be all about Ben. So I'll be joined by therapist and author Em Marinelli, who you'll remember from last week's episode 2 weeks ago. And also Bella, a friend of the pod, Bella, who I mentioned earlier. And we're going to talk all about Ben's internalized homophobia and about what treatment might look like for him to help him accept his identity and hopefully move on and have much more positive relationships. Yeah, so hopefully it'll work out. I think that's what it'll be about, but Em and Bella might have other ideas. So keep an eye out for that episode in the new year. Before we move on to the next bit, I've had listener questions, right? We've had loads of listener questions about Ben and Charlie. So I've picked out two that kind of sum up some of the others. Okay, so help me answer this question. We've waited a long time for these answers, by the way, Paula, so don't feel under
no pressure.
Okay, here we go. It seems that the prohibition against outing someone, while very important, has the potential to empower abusive people. I think that if Charlie had felt okay to tell Tao about Ben, then Tao would have helped Charlie to see what a horrible relationship it was. And I imagine if Ben had done something to hurt Imogen, a preventable situation if Nick had been able to tell her the truth. So the question is, what's the queer dialogue around that issue? Really meaty question.
Really meaty. And I guess when I've been thinking about it a lot since you sent out the questions, and I don't necessarily feel able to say, well, this is what the queer dialogue is around the issue.
Yes.
I can't speak for every queer person. I can only give my own reflections. And I think it's absolutely true that abuse thrives in secret. And that's one of the things that can be challenging for LGBT young people experiencing abusive relationships like Charlie, because it's a secret, he's got no one to turn to. And so although, yes, you should respect someone's confidentiality about their gender or sexual orientation, actually your safety is the most important thing. And I think I wish that it had been possible for Charlie to have a quiet word with someone without, you know, who might have respected, you know, who wouldn't have told everyone. And I had, to be fair, had the same reaction about Imogen. I found myself wanting Nick to tell Imogen about what Ben had done, because it did feel more important to me, because there was a risk of her experiencing abuse in the relationship, and that did feel more important to me than protecting confidentiality around Ben's sexual orientation.
Yeah, for sure. And I kind of agree.
Yeah, and maybe other people wouldn't agree with that, but I would find that hard to justify, if I'm honest. It's about people's safety.
That's it. And we know that Ben has been violent in the past. Like, he was very violent with Charlie in season 1. I guess Charlie, for me, it was Charlie's friendship with Nick that helped him to understand that his relationship with Ben wasn't a healthy one. Before that, we saw at the start of season 1 where Charlie's arriving to school in episode 1, right at the very beginning. He's actually excited to see Ben. This is a relationship that he wants to be in. He hasn't realized that this is a negative or a very unhealthy relationship. And it's his friendship with Nick helps him to see that. Whenever he starts to realize that, he does open up to Mr. Ajay. He goes and he talks to Mr. Ajay about it. He doesn't name Ben, but he does talk to him somewhat, doesn't tell Mr. O'Shea the full story, or else I'm sure Mr. O'Shea would have intervened and be like, okay, yes. So this is, yeah. And then in Nick's defense, in season two, he does actually tell Imogen, you know, that Ben is a really bad person, I think is how he words it. But he isn't specific about it. But yeah, I think your take on it's absolutely right, that while it is important to be confidential and respectful of people's, yeah, I guess, status, whether they're in the closet or not, but when it comes to people's safety, then that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and I guess it's that encouragement to any young person that feels worried about the way their partner's behaving, that run it past someone, see what someone else thinks, and if the person you're with doesn't want you to talk to someone else about it,
yeah,
you know, think carefully about why that might be, because it's really important to sense check and help get other people's perspectives and not allow the person you're with to isolate you from your friends and your family.
I think that's a really important message, especially in early relationships where, or like, this is Charlie's first relationship, so he doesn't really know what relationships are supposed to be like.
Absolutely.
Outside of the movies, yeah. And we all know how contrived they are.
Yeah, and that's what gives Ben the power to be like, this is what a relationship's like, this is what it's supposed that's to be it. Like, when you hear Charlie saying, I thought I must deserve this. And of course, part of that is because he didn't have... If his friends had known, they would absolutely have been telling him, you don't deserve this, you're amazing,
yeah,
you deserve a great
for sure.
relationship. But he's not able to do that.
Yeah. Question number two.
Yes.
I keep thinking about Ben never outing Nick, despite knowing about him from the start. And I don't think it's out of fear of reprisals. Charlie makes it really clear on Sports Day that they wouldn't do that. So what keeps him from behaving the way that David does? Dropping hints, making barb comments to others. I have lots of theories, but would be interested in your views. So why does Ben not out Nick?
I guess I wonder if it is as simple as just Ben... Even though Charlie says that they wouldn't out him, I wonder whether he believes that, you know, does he yeah. think, well, if I outed Nick, then the consequence is that Nick outs me, because how would I know that? So I guess my perception from the outside is that it just seems like self-interest, that he doesn't want other people to find out that he's gay or bisexual. I don't think, do we find out what Ben's sexual orientation is? I don't even know.
He states himself in a question to Nick, whether he can't be bisexual.
Oh, yes. I remember that. Yes, you're yeah. right.
So, yeah, I think that you're right that it's out of self-interest. Maybe deep down he understands that that's yeah. a line that you shouldn't cross. But mm-hmm. I don't think, like, given his past behavior, I'm not sure yeah. that that's very authentically sure. Ben.
Not the most sensitive.
No, definitely not. It could also just be as simple as, like, Nick's the captain of the rugby team and he doesn't want to get his ass kicked. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, Nick's really popular. He's really powerful in the school.
Popularity
he's built. Like, he's a big guy who could take him on. You're right.
Yeah.
So I hadn't even thought of that. That really basic response.
And it could also just be because of Nick's popularity that he doesn't think people would believe yeah. him, or mm-hmm. it would lead to questions about why yeah. how did Ben come about to have this knowledge
exactly.
of Nick and Charlie's
exactly.
relationship. Anyway, thanks so much for writing in with your questions. I'm sorry that you had to wait so long for the answers. I hope that answers your questions. I feel like we should put in a jingle. Maybe I'll put a jingle in.
Yeah, definitely.
We stick with Nick and Charlie as they head back to Nick's house for the Nelson Spring family dinner party. After a cute moment between Charlie and Nick outside, they go in. As they walk in, they say hi to his dad. And again, he doesn't really seem to care very much. He's more interested in the rugby than having a conversation. Like, can you believe that he hardly ever sees Nick? And he arrives in and he sees him for the first yeah. time in a few weeks. And he can't even be bothered to have a conversation with him. It's ridiculous.
It's not nice.
It's horrible. As a parent, I just don't get it. I don't understand.
No. Yeah, it's just the absolute disinterest, especially when they live in different countries. They don't get the chance to spend a lot of time together. So you would expect him to be just really wanting to prioritize that time with his son. That he just
I
doesn't.
Know. Instead, he prioritizes the rugby and then he's like, come on, let's watch the rugby together. It's like, no, that isn't why you're here. Anyway, let's have a listen.
Just want to lay the table, Sarah.
Oh, you are a good boy.
How's it been since he got here?
It's been fine. It's been fine. He doesn't have to know, sweetheart. He's got no right to know. You don't owe him a thing.
I'm not doing it for him. I'm doing it for me.
We can't pass up a Sarah moment. Nick's mum is just awesome.
She's the best. I love her. I love Olivia Colman in general and everything, but she's great in this.
Yeah, so affirming and supportive of Nick.
Yes.
His dad clearly just doesn't give a shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't care at all. Just as genuinely this disinterested, absent parent. And it's, yeah, it's horrible to watch, like, Nick's desire to be loved and supported by his dad and just not getting what he needs back from him.
Oh, I know. It really is so sad. Like, it's heartbreaking. It really is to kind of watch him yearn for this kind of connection. And he gives his dad so many chances. And he just doesn't turn up.
No.
It is. It's hard. Should we talk about the next bit?
Absolutely.
During dinner, Charlie is moving his foot around in his plate. It's quite a high-stakes situation, this family dinner. David starts to stir things up. Let's have a listen.
Have neither of you boys find girlfriends?
No, I guess not.
Oh, well, there's still time.
Yeah, I'm not sure Nick's too interested in looking for girlfriends, really.
Don't you dare.
David, be respectful, please, at the table. We have guests.
Why do you always do this?
I'm just trying to help.
Sorry, this is ridiculous.
Dad.
Charlie's my boyfriend. Surprise. I'm bi, he's gay, and I was actually really stressed out about how I was going to tell you. But you know what? I don't care what you think about it anymore. Because you don't care to even see us more than two times a year. And you know, every time I do see you, I always think, this is it. This is the time when you might actually take an interest in my life, but you never do. So if you don't care, then I don't care either. And I don't know why you're acting like you are 10 years old. But your bullying just doesn't affect me anymore because, quite simply, I do not care. I like who I am. I like my life. Maybe you should stay with Dad next time. Sorry, Mom.
That's another one of those moments that always makes me tear up. Feels so sad for Nick. Do you think it felt good? It must have felt good to say that to his dad.
I think it must have felt absolutely amazing. And again, this is, it was a similarly powerful moment to sort of Charlie standing up to Ben, was Nick just like taking control of the narrative and being really like not hiding, not feeling ashamed, but just feeling proud.
Yeah.
And being like, actually, I'm not ashamed of this. I'm happy. I've got a happy life. I've got a lovely boyfriend. I'm not going to hide it. It felt really this powerful moment of him being like, no. And he takes away, you know, the power, because his mother's held all this power over him, of this like secret.
That's it.
Your secret hanging over him. And he just takes the power back and is like, actually, no, it's not a secret. I'm going to talk openly about it. So I loved this moment. It was amazing.
Yeah, really. It really was. And that's a really interesting comment about the power that David was holding over Nick through this secret. Isn't it strange that these, like, something as personal as our identity can be a weapon of power used against us? Like,
absolutely.
That's really, it's terrifying in a way. But yeah, what a dick David is for using that power in this way instead of being like a supportive brother.
Ugh, yeah. Hate David. Horrible.
Yeah.
And I guess, to be honest, I do feel some empathy for David, actually, because you see as well his relationship with his dad and how impacted he is by it. But yeah, he's still horrible.
Exactly. Another, it's a different way that he's responding to the impact of his dad by taking it out on Nick, really.
Yeah,
isn't that
absolutely.
What's happening?
They've got the same dad.
Yeah, let's have a listen to what happens next. So his mum catches up with him outside. Let's listen to their conversation.
We're not going through this. You're okay.
I actually think I am. Didn't mean for it to happen that way, but felt good to say it.
Do you want a hug anyway?
Well, that went well.
Sorry.
Oh, Mom, please, you said what you said, especially to your dad. You needed to hear it.
He's not a very good dad, is he?
No, he's not.
Why doesn't he care?
I wish I understood, but I don't. I think it's a very sad way to exist.
a really sad moment, but in a way, so lovely with his mum. Like, Sarah's so supportive and affirming.
Yeah. I can't understand how she was ever in a relationship with her dad. Like, I can't see that at all.
Yeah, definitely. It's so nice. Like, it just seems so alien, as I said before, that his dad just doesn't care. Like, I just don't get it. Yeah, that was a really lovely moment between Nick and Charlie, and between Nick and his mum. Yeah, really beautiful.
So much love and support.
For sure. For sure. His dad tries to slip out unnoticed, but Nick sees that he's leaving in the hall. We chatted about this scene in our top moments of season two. So if you're interested, head back and have a listen to that. We'll not rehash it now. It just says a lot about his character, doesn't it? That he tried to sneak out without saying goodbye.
Yeah.
Even after all that's happened, he goes without trying to say goodbye. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's terrible.
It really is bad. Okay, so we're going to skip to Tori. We have, like, a really iconic Tori moment. Tori overhears David talking about Nick and Charlie as she's washing her hands. Let's have a listen.
Oh, it's so cringe. He's made such a big deal out of telling her dad. Such an attention seeker.
Drama queen boyfriend's influence. Yeah, mate, well, exactly. That's it.
You are a pathetic little man. Talk about my brother like that again, and I'll end you.
It's so funny that we're both rolling our eyes.
So awful. Of, like, just like that. And again, it shows the importance of all, it's not just parents that can have an impact on young people's lives, it's all their family members. And his brother, just rather than acknowledging that he's had this big moment where he's something major, which is, you know, telling his family that he's bisexual and he's got a boyfriend,
is massive.
Just minimizes it and acts like it was no big deal, even though he was the one who was
ridiculous,
you know, picking on him and, like, trying to threaten him with it, essentially. So, yeah.
Definitely. Blames Charlie for all the drama queen boyfriend. It was him. He caused the drama.
Absolutely.
Ridiculous. But what a great Tori moment. I feel like we've been starved of Tori moments this season. Like, that was a great Tori moment.
It's like that fiercely protective older sister moment. I love it.
Yeah, she's great. Really, really good. As everyone's getting ready to leave, Sarah and Charlie's mum share a few words. I don't know Charlie's mum's name. Isn't that terrible?
Shocking.
I'm going to get cancelled. I cancel everybody for forgetting names. Now I have to cancel myself. Let's listen to their conversation.
I'm really sorry about all the drama.
Oh.
We are very used to drama in our house.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for Nick to stand up to David like that. He must care for Charlie very deeply.
He's a nice boy, when he's not distracting you from your coursework. And maybe we could have him and Sarah around in a few weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
For coming, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Just gonna say goodbye.
Okay.
So, prom tomorrow?
Yeah. We're still going together?
Yeah.
Like, together.
Yeah, don't you want to?
I kind of feel sorry for Charlie's mum. She's been made out to be a bit of a villain, but I think she's so lovely and genuine sometimes.
Yeah, she's trying her best here, isn't she, to acknowledge the importance of this relationship for Charlie and to make space for him in their lives. But yeah, she's struggling a bit, isn't she? But she's trying, and that's the main thing.
Exactly. And I almost love that they kind of built that story arc in, because parents don't always get it right. You know what I mean?
No,
like, they often get it wrong. They get it so terribly wrong. Like, I know I've gotten it wrong, but you try, don't you? And that's the most important thing.
It's absolutely all that you can do.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we should all be a bit kinder to Charlie's mum. I think she's trying.
We're on team Charlie's mum.
Yeah, Charlie's question about them attending prom together is interesting. He does not seem excited about it.
Yeah, he does seem, I guess you start to see here how much Charlie's struggling, don't you? He's not.
Yeah.
He's trying to be okay. He's pretending to be okay, but he's having a hard time here.
Yeah, it's almost like whenever you are struggling with stuff, you think, if only this was going to happen, if only this was the case, then it would be okay. You know, if only me and Nick were out and I could live an authentic life, then it would be better. And actually, as he comes to these milestones, it doesn't fix the underlying kind of anxiety that he feels.
He's still got his own demons.
Exactly. And I think that's what we're saying here, that although this is a moment that we've been kind of building up to, and Charlie's been really excited about them being out and leading authentic lives, the thought of them actually being the center of attention at prom is uncomfortable for him, and he's not excited about
scary.
It. Yeah. After they leave, Nick's mum, Nick is helping his mum in the kitchen, and she comments that Charlie didn't eat very much, prompting Nick to Google eating disorders. Oh, it's so heartbreaking to watch this scene and to watch the story arc develop, you know?
And what a caring boyfriend, Nick, as well, you know, is keeping an eye on Charlie's well-being, and he's doing his research and trying to think about and work out how he can support him. So that's a positive side, I guess.
Definitely, definitely. It really is. It must be hard at that age. Like, you're only 16 and your boyfriend's going through all this stuff. To want to support somebody but not really know how to must be really tough.
Absolutely.
It's good that Google's there to help.
Yes, help us solve all of our problems. Thank you, Google.
We cut to Darcy, where she's trying on her prom outfit and messaging Tara about how cute they're going to look the next day. I'm not sure if I'll be able to include the audio because there's just so much music in it, but me and Paul are going to listen to it, and then maybe I'll include it and we'll see what Spotify does. I might spit it back out again. Let's have a listen. Oh, it's tough. This is a really difficult moment for Darcy.
It's hard to watch, wasn't it?
Really heartbreaking. She was so excited about wearing her suit and about how great they're going to look. And then her mum's reaction is just so extreme. Yeah. The disappointment of her mum's reaction must have just been so intense, like to feel that kind of rejection. And then
she's having these beautiful moments with her friends of like love and
acceptance
and just... Yeah, that's why it was so devastating to watch, because you'd seen her be so like buoyed up by her friends and encouraged and supported, and then she goes home and that's just all she's made fun of, really.
So negative. Yeah, I know.
Mum mocks her.
That's it. She mocks her, and then she tells her, "You're not wearing it." Do you know, it's that power dynamic again, where her mum feels like she can
control her.
Yeah, control what she wears and what she does, and you know, it's just awful to listen to.
Yeah, it's horrible. I think for me it was definitely the hardest bit of the episode. Possibly the hardest bit of the whole series to watch. It felt really real. It felt really authentic and kind of well acted. I think the fact that they have got the music playing, you know, whether you choose to play the audio or not, the visual is the strongest bit of it. You don't even need to hear the words to see what's happening
between
the
two
of them and how profoundly rejected Darcy feels.
It's horrible to watch. It really is a tough moment. And then she ends up in this really serious situation where she's like, 15 or 16, and she's kicked out. She's on the street at night. And that's where we end the episode with her standing on the street. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's horrible. She's so lonely and alone, and she doesn't know what to do. And she doesn't really want, or in the sense I get anyway, she doesn't really want to tell her friends about it. She wants her friendship group to be this happy, silly, funny space, and she doesn't want to tell her girlfriend about it either, and that's hard because she would get support from Tara.
Oh,
and Tara's mum would absolutely tell her to come stay, you know. So for the viewer, you can see the options that she has, but she doesn't see them when she's under here.
No, that's it. And I guess in a way there's two things, isn't there? There's kind of that shame that she feels about not being out with her mum, like she presents herself as being this really strong, I am proud individual, but actually, and in a way, she doesn't really want to break down that image of herself. And then there's the other side of it, where her friends are actually her escape from this situation. Like, that's where she goes to escape this, you know? Does that make sense? Not really.
Makes total sense, yeah.
I was really surprised by the story arc and about, whenever I started to read around on it, about how common it is that LGBT people are disproportionately affected by homelessness or are at risk of homelessness.
We certainly see that in our own supervision, that we have young people who relationships with their parents break down because of coming out, and that they become homeless as a result. It's not every young person, but it does happen, and when it happens, it's really challenging. Even when those relationships are repaired later,
yeah,
there was still that when you became vulnerable and you told your parents and it was hard for you to talk about, that's been their reaction. It's incredibly painful in terms of the rejection of that. And of course, then the impact that comes from being homeless and potentially having to find somewhere to live and be going into homeless accommodation, like those things have impact on young people's mental health and attainment.
It definitely does. If you think about the knock-on effect that has on education and future employment and things like that, like this can have a hugely profound impact on their whole lives, really.
Absolutely.
This is an area that we're going to feature in our bonus episodes next year, and I have a really exciting new partner joining our panel called AKT. AKT is a queer youth charity which exists to support young people who are experiencing homelessness or who are at risk of homelessness or who have a hostile living environment, kind of like Darcy. Their youth engagement team works across the UK, and they've delivered almost 7,000 housing support sessions which help their service users to access the right kind of support for them, whether that's placing them in long-term secure housing, helping them to access mental health services, or connecting them to education and training. So it's an episode that I'm really, really excited about, just because this is such a serious issue, and it's one that I had no idea that it was such a big deal. So I'm really excited to learn more about it. So make sure you tune in next year. We had hoped that they'd join us for this episode, but sadly they weren't available. But tune in next year to hear that. It's an episode that I'm really excited about. As I said, the show ends with Darcy standing alone in the dark on the street outside her house. Totally, totally heartbreaking.
Yes.
Really tough ending.
Really tough. Really tough. Lots of good ones.
Yeah. What are your hopes and dreams for season 3, Paula?
Well, I want to see Darcy being more able to be open with her friends.
Yeah.
And to use their support and to be honest with Tara about what's hard. I know we kind of see that a bit in this season, but I want to see more of that. And I also am just, I guess I want to see what happens between Ellie and Tao. Like, I believe in their love. Like, I want to see, like, where that goes. And how they, I believe in their relationship. So I'm excited to see what happens. And I haven't read the book, so I have no idea.
Oh, really?
No.
Ooh, you're in for a treat.
Maybe should I read the books? Would you recommend?
I would, yeah, they're great. You can actually, if you don't want to continue to fund the multi-millionaire Alice Osman, you can actually read them for free still. I shouldn't joke about Alice Osman's wealth. I should cut that out. Yeah, if you want to read, you can pick up the books or you can read for free online. There's webtoons, great. Like they're still published for free. That was always a huge part of what Alice did. That's how the series got started.
Amazing.
And right up until the new edition that's being released this Christmas, I think there are parts of it online already. So
it's incredible.
Definitely. I'll share the link with you. Graphic novels, it's quick.
Yes. I don't think I even knew they were graphic novels, but of course that's where all the cartoon references come from.
Exactly. Paula,
now I understand that. I know, I'm canceled. So sorry. I have seen the show, but I've not read the books, but I'm not.
So funny. My hope and dream for season 3 is that I can make it through a podcast episode without crying. Like, that would be like a really big milestone.
It's good to be in touch with your emotions. That's a positive thing.
Yeah, very good. Thanks so much for coming on, Paula. I really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are and how busy LGBT Scotland is as an organisation. And it's great that you come and share this experience with us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Share your point of view and tell us about the work that you do. I'm always so humbled by the work that our charity partners do with queer young people. I think it's just incredibly special. You know, if you think about the world that we grew up in compared to the world as it is now for queer young people, and a lot of that is to do with the work that your organisation does in schools and colleges across Scotland and the other partners that we work with. But yeah, I really, really, really appreciate it. So thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, always. And thank you, listeners, for staying and listening in. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. As always, hit that subscribe button. It really goes a long way to helping us reach a bigger audience. It's something I really appreciate. And yeah, all there is left is to say cheerios, Paula, to say goodbye to listeners.
Goodbye, listeners.
Bye, folks. The Proper Full On Gay Podcast is produced by Shut Up World and features me, Jamie Wilson, and today's special guest, Paula Manners from LGBT Youth Scotland. Copywritten material within this episode is made available to provide criticism, comment, or review. For more information, please see our Fair Use and Fair Dealing Statement at www.properfullongaypodcast.com.